Hello, and welcome to the Astro City Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting Kurt Busiek's Astro City series. In this Astro City Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Astro City, The Dark Age, Book 3, Into the Abyss, number 1 through 4, from 2009. James, how you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, I have not read this since 2009.
Oh, okay. Well, I read it on Sunday.
You called my bluff. I did read it on Sunday, but I hadn't read it before Sunday since 2009. That's what I meant.
I'm sorry, I'm giving you grief.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And it's funny because it's not a bad story, but it does have some things that make it among my least favorite of Astro City.
Yeah, okay. I was having a hard time putting my finger on it, but I really felt it in this third book where I was almost physically getting a little bit bored with what we're doing here, this exercise. I felt myself mentally checking out in the middle of reading the story.
Yeah, I felt some of that too, and I think part of it was Busiek's decision to have Charles and Royal Williams as kind of the vantage point characters.
Yes.
And we've already been with them for 8 issues. This is another 4. We got another 4 after this in book 4. That's a lot.
It's a lot of these two.
Well, yeah, when you figure we've only got, 130 issues all said and done of the series, I think?
Yeah, that's a big chunk. That's 10% to these two guys.
And it's not whether they're good characters or bad characters or interesting characters or anything of the sort. It's the fact that, again, we're focusing so much on them. And we're totaling up to really around, I think, 400 pages. Matter of fact, it may be exactly 400 pages with the Williams brothers out of, according to my spreadsheet, 2,768 pages.
Wow. That's a lot.
Big chunk.
A big, big chunk. And that explains probably why I was feeling a little bit of like, almost like, I don't want to say fatigue, but you know what I mean? Where you feel like, ah, okay, all right, yeah, we get it. You're the bad brother. You're the good brother. Oh, okay. The struggles with that. You're just like, I feel like, I know I've read this story. Let's move it on. Let's go.
The way the story was told in the previous two books, some captions were by Royal, some were by Charles.
Yes.
I'm not a big fan of the captions being by a particular character in the story. Mm-hmm. I prefer the third-person omniscient narrator, that kind of a deal.
Me too.
But what got me with this is we start, and they're cutting they've got one by Charles, then Royal, then Charles, then Royal. They're having a discussion, an argument, actually, of, you know, when certain things happened, as if the two are being interviewed long after the fact.
Yeah, that did not work for me, and it is so uncanny. You and I must have been, we were doing this too long together. We've been a tag team for too long, because real big bold at the top, I'm like, the third person omniscient works for me. And this, what we're doing here, it seems like he's gotten away from that in different, this person, it's almost like Kurt Busiek's, you know, his knowledge, and he's showing us through different people's vantage points, because he knows everything that's going on in this universe, and instead we're dealing with these two guys and his viewpoint and everything about these people, and to the point where I know about their girlfriends, I know about their mom, I know about their parents, I know more than I ever wanted to know about them. And I'm not saying that's bad, but man, there's so many stories in Astro City I'd much rather read than these two guys.
And that goes back to the opportunity cost stuff we talked about last time.
Yeah, I mean, we get these new characters like the Apollo 11, and all this weird stuff's happening with them, and I feel like I don't know anything about them.
What got me with the Apollo 11 is in the third issue here, and we're going to be bouncing around a lot this episode, and that's fine.
Yeah.
We start with the Apollo 11 essentially as those vantage point characters.
Yes.
And to the point of we're seeing the missile silo base they've got, we're getting captions because we've gone back to omniscient narrator and stuff, maybe. Or maybe it's one of the brothers telling us who these people are. But we're getting their names and their code names listed off.
Yep.
which was nice, because, I mean, we've had these characters around for two books now. It'd be nice to know who they are. But it feels like at this point we have essentially left the William brothers for a good couple of pages here at the beginning to go find out what the hell is going on with the Apollo 11, and then we kind of segue back into the story of the Williams brothers.
That came off as very jarring, almost, because you're like, okay, we're transitioning over here, and then you have almost like a big battle scene that happens in the fourth issue of this third book.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like, okay, that's a cool action sequence and all this stuff happened. Why are we wasting so much time on these other two yahoos if this is what we're getting? It just seems so like out of the blue, and it didn't really mesh with the story that was the first 2.5 issues, let's say.
Yeah, I think this book really struggled with what story is being told.
Yes.
Because we still have the Williams brother and their arc going through it. And I would say the crux of that arc is Charles is now working for Eagle.
Yep.
It seems like he got the job based on having a brother he could place undercover within Pyramid.
Yep.
There's some back and forth of the brothers not getting along over a little of that. And then at the end, they're still going after this Aubrey Jason guy that killed their parents. So that's kind of their arc. But we get a lot with the Apollo 11 here, which I found interesting, but tangential to the Williams brothers arc. We also got an amount with the first family in places.
Yep.
What's going on with the Innocent Gun and stuff like that. We get a couple of new characters and groups introduced in this book, which normally would have gotten their own kind of issue to be spotlighted. I think it was the experimentals in the second issue that I found kind of interesting. But you've got to kind of read between the lines to figure out who they are and what their deal is.
Yeah, they're almost glossed over, and not in a good way, I would say.
Yeah.
I felt like they should have been brought to the forefront, because ultimately, I think Astro City is a story about the city and the people and the goings-on in the city, whether it be a metropolis or whatever you want to call this city. But its impact on the local populace versus... If the superheroes weren't there, if the superheroes weren't at the forefront and those things wouldn't be going on, this would be slice of town, any town USA, and I don't think anyone would care. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but I think people came here for the superheroics, but seen from the vantage point of different common men, walking the streets, walking a beat cop, or I own a store, and this is how superheroes impacted my life. I think that's really kind of the magic. And
yeah.
They really got away from that because it became these guys are the heroes and there's nothing particularly heroic about them.
They're not they're the protagonists, sort of.
The protagonists, yeah. And that's not what people come to Astro City for, I don't think. It would be like if I went to, let's say, Star City, you know, where Green Arrow is. I'm going to Star City and the topic of town is Ollie and Green Arrow and hit the goings on about that. But we're not going to tell that story. We're going to tell the story of this banker over here. People will be like, no, I didn't come here to read that story. I came to read about the superheroes. I want to see that happen.
I think that's a common complaint about Astro City is it looks like a superhero title, but you're focusing on the banker, the store owner, whatever. And some people get a little lost on but what's the draw? What's the core of the concept of this franchise?
Correct.
And like you had said, it's the different vantage points look at superheroes.
Yeah, he's been able to fold the superheroes in and see the impact that's had on these people's lives versus just their life, you know, their plain vanilla life. And
it's looking at the superheroes from the outside, not the inside.
Yeah, and I felt like we get very, very minimal impact of the superheroes on these two guys' lives other than Royal getting that mark on his neck, you know, way back in book one.
But even that's forgotten about by this point.
Exactly. It's gone. I guess it faded? I don't know.
We never got a resolution on that last issue or last book that I recall.
Yeah, that was book two. And I don't know, did he just forget or we're just assuming the isotope stays in there for so long? That's where...
Or did something happen to Blue Knight?
Yeah, whatever his name was, the Ghost Rider looking knight.
Yeah, the Ghost Rider cop type, yeah.
But yeah, did something happen to him or... What happened to his isotope in the neck is what I'm calling it. I don't know what to call it.
Well, they had the bit where the Supernaturals were going after the Ghost Rider type, but there was no mention that, oh, and after that, my mark faded or something.
Correct. So that's like a miss here. And that was, I felt like, the most Astro City thing that happened in this Dark Ages thing, is seeing that and seeing, you know, maybe him getting caught up in the crime along with Jack in the Box popping up and stuff like that. But I feel like this third book, it went so far away from that formula and more into the melodrama of these two brothers that people are just like, man, this is really not what I came for.
Yeah, well, and it goes to opportunity cost in terms of not only are we spending so much time on them.
Yeah.
But like, we get a couple of things just sometimes in a panel, like when we get the mention of the Honor Guard fighting the Olympians like five times.
Yeah.
And they've got Captain Lightning, Sunstar, Weaponer, and stuff like that. I look at that page, and one of the guys, I guess Captain Lightning, kind of looks like an electrical version of Superman, and he might have even been in his electric mode at this point. One of the guys seems to be running really fast, kind of like a Flash, but he looked like a very JLA kind of a riff, because, oh, these guys are from another world. Like, and all we get is a panel with them, and poof, that's it.
Yeah, and you're thinking, man, I would like to know something about them, or maybe see how their impact is on the story, because you threw them in there for some reason, you would think, but not really.
Or what if the Honor Guard went to their world and getting the flip side of that? I mean, that could have been a great two-issue story.
Yep, I would have been in for it, and I would have been like, that's cool.
And then we get the Starfighter and the other panel on that page being split in two, one good, one bad, and you can't really tell which is the bad one. Because this whole riff is Royal going on about how the heroes, they're not killing you these days, and you should be thankful.
Correct.
Kind of a thing, because it's a darker, grimmer, grittier time, as were comics. 1982, I guess, is when we're at this book. But we get some of those things teased and never really gone into, and we get, I think, three pages with the experimentals.
Yep.
And what I loved about this group is these characters are Solid, Liquid, Vapor, and Energini.
Yep.
And it's essentially an elementals kind of a group, which if you take Energini as kind of the Human Torch, Liquid is kind of Mr. Fantastic, Solid is the Thing, and Vapor as the Invisible Woman. This is another Fantastic Four riff.
Definitely, and they just kind of disappear off panel and they're gone.
Yeah, I mean, their powers are very much atomic manipulation on a wild level.
Yeah.
When they're explaining how they could have put the building back together and stuff. And it's just, man, I would have loved to have had an issue on these guys. And we still could at some point.
Yeah.
Because they seem like kids at this point.
Yeah, we still could see them, but right now we don't know if we will ever see them again. And it was like kind of weird because they were introduced, but I feel like we don't really know much, if anything, about them.
Exactly. And it just seemed to be that one of the brothers was walking by the neighborhood when that happened.
Yep.
And it didn't really have anything to do with their story, but we get enough of that sprinkled in that we're kind of getting some interesting stuff. But again, whose story is this?
Correct. I think the thing that got fleshed out the most on, I wouldn't even call it the superheroic side, but more on, I guess you could call it that, the comic booky side, would be Eagle, which is kind of like S.H.I.E.L.D. and how they got, and then also on the flip side, Pyramid, because they're trying to take down Pyramid.
Yeah.
And Charles is working with Eagle. I took Eagle to be S.H.I.E.L.D. Is that who you took them to be?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, you could argue the closest DC has is Checkmate, but that's nothing compared to the long history that S.H.I.E.L.D. has over at Marvel.
Yeah.
And then I would say Pyramid is their the equivalent here of Hydra or
AIM.
Any one of those types of groups, of which there's a half a dozen at Marvel, and I think Cobra is the only real organized kind of a thing over at DC. It's Cobra with a K, not Cobra with a C like over in G.I. Joe. Totally different groups.
Yeah, but you see those fleshed out because you see the training camps, you see
the
recruitment process and all that type of stuff, which I thought that part was cool, but it's not what I would call the super heroics of Astro City. You know, it's more of the organization and military groups that are in Astro City of people who don't have any powers. And that's fine, but I can see how this book three specifically would sour people towards Astro City because they're like, this doesn't, you know, not what I came here for. This isn't what I want to read. I could see people feeling that.
Well, I think normally we would have seen the training camp and all of that stuff as like a one-issue story of somebody who's down on their luck, has nothing else to do, so they sign up with this group, not kind of realizing at first what it is, and then, oh, this is Pyramid, they're big bad, etc.
It would have been introduced in a much more interesting way than what we have here.
Yeah, well, and it would have just been focused on that, versus kind of cutting back and forth to it and taking Royal, who had just been a street level thug, and Charles, who had been a police officer, and kicking Royal into Pyramid, kind of the supervillain thug level kind of a thing. Not that he's got powers, but it's a step up from street level thug, I see.
Yeah.
And then Charles having gotten into Eagle. And then when we wind up with both of them undercover, unbeknown to the other, inside of Pyramid, I thought that was kind of wild. And that scene where all hell's kind of breaking loose and the buildings going around down behind them and stuff, or all around them, that was one of the few things that I really kind of had a vague memory of out of this story. If I knew at some point in the Dark Ages, they kind of bumped into each other in there in the midst of this superheroic fight going on.
Yeah.
But even that didn't really stand out too much for me.
Yeah, not that much. I mean, it didn't stand out for me either. I felt like this was the book that it didn't sit well with me as far. The other two, I enjoyed them a little bit more than this one. And this is where I really felt like the story was getting long in the tooth. And it made me tiresome that I'm like, wow, we have a fourth book to read with these two. And I guess it was kind of interesting to see Charles recovering. You know, that's told through flashback narratives because the last we saw of him, he had gotten filled full of bullet holes and laying there on the street.
Yeah, because this is 4 years after the last book.
Correct. So as far as we know, he died before this book came out. I mean, of course he didn't.
Well, I thought it was pretty clear he had the will to live.
Exactly, because he heard the stuff in the hospital.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was kind of, oh, okay, he struggled. He learned to walk again and all this. And then you see him go into Eagle, a.k.a. S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a cool thing. And there were so many characters I felt like were introduced in the Dark Ages. And I feel like I know none of these characters. I still feel like they're foreign to me. And that's not a good feeling. Whereas before, we would see some characters and I felt like it was a tease for maybe an upcoming arc that was coming or a book that was going to feature the Silver Agent or this character or that character.
Well, like when we got in the focus on Jack in a Box, he was enough established after that, the character could have done a solo title.
Yeah, exactly. He was teased enough. Yeah, he could have done a solo title and it might have been really cool.
Well, he was developed enough.
Yeah, and none of these characters were developed. They were literally pictures and you saw a power set, but I'm still ambiguous about the power set. I don't remember the names for the life of me. Unless I took copious notes, I would not remember these names just because they're so far background.
Yeah, like when we get the Omega Rangers introduced, and it turns out, I guess, Bravo is leading that group or something, and we'd seen Bravo as the sidekick of El Hombre, maybe?
Yeah.
In the Steeljack stuff. But it's like, I don't know who else is on that team. I don't know what's going on, why they're called the Omega Rangers. Is this a grown-up version of the Irregulars, maybe? I had a lot of those kinds of questions coming out of this. And again, the individual issues aren't bad. The individual scenes aren't bad and stuff. It's just the way this particular book is structured and the fact it's book 3 out of 4, a total of 16 issues. It's telling a bigger story, and the bigger story, and I think that's where, again, this story is fundamentally different than most Astro City stuffs. This is trying to cover the 70s and 80s era of Astro City's backstory versus most other issues are either in the present day or flashing back to a particular point in the past, telling a very focused story and then moving on.
Yeah.
Whereas this is prolonged, protracted, and there's like with the Silver Agent, he's coming back. Everything's going to be magically okay come May 3rd, 1982, which we get to at this point.
Yep.
Everything's not okay. Everybody's upset. And it felt like they were reading a lot more into, hey, meet me at the falls at this point, Honor Guard. The whole people having all this hope and then poof, it's gone. I felt we were told that in the captions, and I didn't really feel that it was sold as to why was there that fundamental shift.
Yeah, I don't understand why he did that. And I was expecting something to happen or that to be a big thing. And I was just like, okay, we're going a different direction. I honestly just wonder what Busick was thinking with, hey, I want to take years, because he spent a few years on this. Like you said, the opportunity cost.
This was a 5-year kind of an arc.
I want to take 5 years of my life and 5 years of my artist life, assuming they didn't do anything else, which they may have, and focus on these two characters and almost change the formula and almost no development of the characters, no fleshing out of the characters. I felt like he lost his magic for these up till now, 12 issues and maybe 16 issues. And I feel like that's a little bit unfortunate. And like I said, it's not the first two were a little bit more enjoyable, and I felt like book three is where I started mentally almost tapping out at this point.
Well, I mean, I guess for me, I enjoyed aspects of the story. I just didn't enjoy the story as a whole.
Yeah. There are parts that are enjoyable. That's the weird thing. It's still not written horribly. It's not something like, oh, this is the worst. As a whole, it's almost hard to vocalize the reading it and just the not really overall enjoyment. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's okay.
If we had just gotten like Charles's arc of him going through Eagle, kind of getting obsessed with finding Pyramid, having this opportunity to maybe date one of the other people there and just kind of blowing it. Does he go after the guy? If we had just had that kind of an arc and not gotten sidetracked by what's going on with the Silver Agent, the First Family, introducing the experimentals and all of that stuff, if it had just been focused, I think that could have been a very good story.
It felt like it was almost haphazard scattershot. Like he took a shotgun blast with all these things that happened, but none of them had enough attention other than the Charles portion, which then... what was the point of putting this in here if we're not going to develop and focus on these characters for something to come, which I know a lot of these characters I've not seen again in the future. So what was the point of the exercise, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, and that's a fair question. But I think if they had pulled out Royal's stuff and just done his adventure in Pyramid and stuff like that as, you know, a two-issue arc or something like that, that could have been good.
Yeah.
But then you could have had all these things where they're constantly referencing back to these same points in time, maybe have a little more on the Silver Agent coming out, or maybe that's its own arc or something like that. But having all of it in this story made it feel like it was focusing on the revealing of the backstory versus telling a story.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, and that's a big miss, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's where he went astray. And all this being said, there's parts of this thing I did enjoy. I was like, okay, this is cool. I like the shield thing. I like the pyramid thing. I could see where those two organizations could routinely face off in the future, you know, inside of Astro City. You could see that happening because it's shield and Hydra. There they are.
You know how sometimes they say that something is greater than the sum of the parts?
Yeah.
I think this is lesser than the sum of the parts.
Very true.
Because the individual parts aren't bad. But what also got me is there were things here that were very clearly the fact, like they don't catch Aubrey Jason, he's out loose. They were being set up for book four.
Yeah.
Apollo 11 seems to be done with at this point, but then there's the whole innocent gun and oops, that wasn't when to use it. So presumably it's going to be needed at some point, and I would guess book four.
I'm thinking.
I don't recall. And then, if only we'd had it and it hadn't been wasted by so-and-so over at this point. And I think Kurt Busiek is telling issues that build to a book, that build to a meta arc, or whatever you want to call it, an epic, out of this entire series. So he's trying to work at multiple levels, and while I think it builds into the totality of Astro City fine, and it works decently well at the issue level, okay at the book level, it's at the four-book level, and in the book level and the four-book level, those two are where it's kind of faltering for me.
No, I understand exactly what you mean. I feel the same way. And it's a little bit disappointing that, like you, I've said multiple times, 5 years of his time was spent on this in Astro City, because there's so much more to be had. There's so much more enjoyment. When the formula is done correctly, you literally get excited to see these new characters and hear their stories. And it doesn't have to be focused on Charles and Royal for so long. I'm thinking back to, I can't remember the name, the cartoon lion. Was it Leo? I don't remember.
Leo the Lion.
Yeah, Leo the Lion. I miss those types of stories. I miss seeing the religious characters. I even forgot their names. They all had like the little crosses on their chest.
The crossbreed.
I would love to see them again. I would love to see Jack in the Box again. He made an appearance in here, but I feel like, hey, that's the Spider-Man. That's the whatever of this universe.
That's not even the Jack in a Box we'd read before is the thing.
Correct. He's a different guy.
He's the father of.
Yeah. And honestly, that was a cooler story, seeing how he's evolved over the years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I liked a little of what we got more in book two than we got here, because Jack in a Box was seen but didn't really do anything, or wasn't, let me rephrase that. He did stuff, he just wasn't developed.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt we got to know in books one and two, the original Jack in a Box. But it's like at this point in time in the 80s, were the crossbreed even a thing? Or was there a precursor to them or what?
We don't know. I don't know when they came out, so they may not have even existed.
And like with the Innocent Gun, I think it could have been a very interesting story to do a one-issue thing, possibly told in the far future of Astro City, where we're getting the history of the Innocent Gun, complete with the two-page pause of the story here for its origin and stuff, and maybe we find out when, you know, again, what we got in, I guess, the previous book, where the first family finds it, it gets used here, when should it have gotten used, something where that whole thread gets compressed into an issue where you can follow it clearly versus, wait, what was going on with this last I saw it? Why do I care? And now I got to wait another year to find out when maybe it should have been used or maybe later. I don't know.
It seems like that was a big miss because that was set up to be the answer to a major threat to Astro City. And there was a threat in here, but it didn't feel like it was used properly. And it was stated it wasn't used properly. It was just, it was disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's off the table, essentially, for now, as far as we know.
Well, at some point, it's got to come back, and I'm assuming in book four, I'm assuming the Silver Agent will be there, because I'm not sure. I'd have to reread part of this to see if he realizes it was used at the wrong time or not, because he knew they had to go check on it, so presumably that was from his previous jump further in our future.
Yeah.
Because he's going backwards in time at this point.
And the way they admonish that poor guy for using it, he's like, I didn't know. I thought it was just a gun. I kind of felt bad for the guy using the gun.
Well, and there was no mention in this book of what happened to Simon Magus, was there?
No.
Because we get Grimore, who's kind of taking over that role.
Correct.
But I don't recall even a, I mean, maybe there was, and I've just forgotten, a passing mention of, and he wasn't seen after. I mean, I know in the previous book when he was really dived into, we got that comment of he was gone by the 80s.
Yeah, correct. But there was no mention in here that I recollect either, which is another thing like that mark on Royal's Nest. Some things just disappear and it's left up to you. Hey, something happened within the 4 years and I didn't tell you what happened.
Yeah.
Because maybe he didn't want to or it felt like it wasn't important.
Well, and I'm curious what Kerpusik's health was like during this period, because I know at some point he went through some major problems with mercury poisoning.
Yeah.
And it really impacted his ability to kind of do that deep level of focus to weave the tight narrative you would need to weave for a 16-issue arc.
Yeah, that's true. It could have been something with his health around that time that we don't know about. And I always say things happen to writers and you and I don't know, or they tell us later on something happened. And the most recent example was Donnie Cates.
Mm-hmm.
Prolific writer, fantastic. And then one day he just disappears. Other people take over his books. We hear nothing. You hear he's in rehab. I'm like, wow, I didn't know he was a drug addict. No, it's in rehab that he was in a bad car accident. And he literally doesn't know who his girlfriend is. He doesn't remember his name to that level, the brain trauma he had.
Yeah, tragic.
He can't write anymore. And he was so good. And I'm not saying that happened here, but having mercury poisoning, you don't even know how it affects the mind, you know, remembering your notes or what was going on.
Well, and Kerpusik has said over the years, and I don't remember when he had said exactly what, but things to the point of, it's one thing to just, you know, I don't want to say slap together an Avengers story or something like that, but it's a different level of thinking than kind of the world building he's doing here.
Yeah.
And the, again, plant the seed here, to develop it here, to pay it off here, and then recall it here.
Yeah, exactly.
There is some of this going on here. There's quite a bit of it going on. And again, I'm not saying this is bad. I know it seems like we may have been kind of harsh in this episode on the book. It's just, it's not up to the peak that Astro City can get to. And I think a lot of it is, there's a lot going on and it doesn't kind of tie together nicely as a lot of the things tend to do.
Correct.
And again, a lot of that is because it's a lot of single issue stories that are building up that tapestry of Astro City. Versus here, he's trying to stitch it all together in these 16 issues for everything in the 70s and 80s, it feels like.
Correct. He's trying to do decades worth of work over these few issues. And I think, and this is just me thinking, you know, I can't put my thoughts into his head or whatever. I don't have any knowledge to his thinking, that he might have put more on the character side into these stories than he could handle. And I'm not saying that as an insulting thing, but like you said, the one issue story, you can have Jack in the Box be the focal, and you may have a character or two or the honor guard flying by, but the cast is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think he introduced very easily in these dark ages. I wouldn't be surprised if he's introducing 20 characters.
Oh, easily, easily.
It might be 30 characters. That's a lot to juggle.
The Apollo 11, we may have had mention of before, but we actually see all of them.
Yeah.
We see the Omega Rangers, the Elementals. We get a number of other characters like the Jade Dragons last book.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think some of the other ones, this book and stuff. Point Man is a good example.
Yeah.
Simon Magus, Grimoire, Hellhound from the previous book. So there's a ton of characters. And I think that's the, I don't say the fallacy, but the weak point of the Dark Ages is he cast too wide of a net to tell it once.
Yes. That's where I think he failed. Yeah.
Yeah. If he had had an issue of, well, here's what happened with Hellhound, here's what happened with this, and then maybe do one where some of this all comes together with the Black Velvet stuff, have one of, oh, we find out this one character is joined up with Pyramid and it's not going well, or he goes from one issue he's the street thug, next issue he's in Pyramid, and then we do another one where it's like, oh, there's this cop, he's now an Eagle, and then a fifth where, oh, wait, they're brothers? What the hell?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And when you're seeing whoever it is, Pink Velvet, what was their name?
Black Velvet.
Black Velvet. Oh my God, I said Pink Velvet.
Totally different character.
When you get the Black Velvet, or you get to whichever character you want to pick in here, the Apollo 11, that could have been a two-issue arc where you're still dealing with Royal and Charles, but they happen to run into these characters, and you see them, and they're not having to be carried over, and they're not playing out of a bigger thread, and you feel like you get to know who they are. Okay, oh, they got introduced. Oh, remember, those are the whatever. Oh, yeah, okay, and here's their character set. Oh, yeah, that's their name. All right, cool, cool. And it's not important, but you feel like you kind of know who they are a little bit versus the when they throw in so many characters. I'm like, and then you're waiting several issues to find out who they even are. That's not good.
The James Robinson run of Starman would periodically do an issue where it's, okay, here's a backstory of a Starman or something like that. You know, it would kind of pause from the regular stuff, do it as an intermission, and
yeah,
I forget what they called those issues, but they tended to have a name or whatever. Imagine if Kurt Busiek had done a similar thing where it's like every few issues we're going to go back into the 70s or the 80s and dive in there, and there'd be enough contextual stuff in the captions for us to piece together this is before or after this happened or whatever. And maybe some of the stuff is set up of, and the Silver Agent was executed, but oh, then he showed back up or this happened. And then later we get the full story of that, but feeling like we already know parts of it because we've been told parts of it.
That would have worked.
Yeah, versus trying to throw it again all into one 16-issue epic and kind of kick it into a blender and seeing if it all works.
And it obviously didn't, just from us talking. And all that to be said, well, he's still a fantastic writer. And when he, I think, narrows down the cast a little bit and deals with Astra City for this particular little story, and I'm going to touch on these one, two, or three characters, that's where it's magic and it's really kind of cool. And it's so different than anything you get. So I think he stepped too far away, spent 5 years doing this, and hats off to him. I appreciate it. He did it, but I'm going to be happy to get back to what made Astra City Astra City.
Yeah, I'll be happy when we get to kind of that third volume.
Yeah.
Because I think it had some good stuff. We've still got not only one more book of the Dark Age, but then we're going to circle back to that Samaritan special that happened between books one and two, the Beauty special that, or let me not say happened, but was released between, because I think those are present day stories. The Beauty special between books two and three, and then Astra between three and four, and then we'll hit the Silver Agent story that is probably a follow-on to this because it came out just a couple of months after book four.
Yeah, and I think that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
And then we get, I think it paused for almost 3 years before it kicked in with that third volume.
Yeah, there was a big pause. And then he did the third volume, and then I think we might have had a special after that.
We had the special that this is then teasing a Sidekicks, Teen Titans-ish kind of story that looked like a ton of fun.
And it just never materialized.
It's only been two and a half years, I think, since then.
Only 2.5 years.
And I get that this is a harder series to write and develop, because as we've mentioned, all of these characters that show up here, that's not just a drop a name and poof, you're done. Like, there was a feature in the back of book one or book two, one of those issues, about the development of Simon Magus. Because Kurt had, here's what I'm trying to do with it. Brent came up with some designs. It just didn't quite work. Alex Ross took a stab at it, redesigned it this way. Everything starts to gel when they're all starting to work on it that way. Because really, I think the original character concepts and stuff by Busick, the character designs by Alex Ross visually, and then the final development and bringing them to life from Brent Anderson, those two guys work really well together. And look at all of the characters they've developed.
A ton. And there's some I like more than others, just like you. But I like when we get to the characters when they do traditional Astro City. I feel like I know who the characters are, and I kind of enjoy them, and I like them. And I'm always like, oh, I want to know more about this guy. Don't you feel that sometimes? You read it, I'm like, I want to know more about that guy, or I want to know more about this team. They're really kind of cool.
There's some issues I like. There's some characters I think the writing is really effective, and I dislike them a lot.
Yeah.
And there are others that just really strike a chord with me, either the story, the character, or whatever. And that's going to be different for everybody.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if Charles and Royal had struck a chord with me, I might have fundamentally different thoughts on the Dark Ages.
Yeah, but they didn't for me.
Yeah.
And I'm taking it they didn't for you either. And all that being said, they're not bad characters. They're just not, for me, they just didn't engage me. That's just where we are.
Well, and I think part of it for me is they have not answered one nagging question I have, and they actually took a possible answer, I think, off the table in this book. After their parents were killed, who raised Charles and Royal?
We're never told that, are we?
No.
I don't know if they're in foster care. I don't know if they had an adoptive family member. We don't know if their grandmother. We don't know anything. We just know the burning building, and now they're older.
We do get the grandfather in one of these issues.
But we don't know if he raised them.
But it was mentioned that the grandfather had been gone 25 years by then.
Yep.
So I'm guessing from 82 where we're at. But also, they used to go down every summer to spend time with him.
Yep.
Not they were raised by him.
Yeah, more like a visit. So where were they? We don't know.
Yeah, so I'm assuming raised by the system, but that's a pretty major gap in information about the two focal characters for over a tenth of the run of Astro City.
Yeah, I'm assuming at this point foster care, because I would have thought if they had more family members, those family members would be somehow impacted or show up in this story, and nobody shows up other than the grandpa.
Grandpa Snow is the only other family ever mentioned other than the parents that were killed.
Yep. And he was kind of a cool guy, just laid back and,
oh yeah,
I want to get away and go fishing. he was just cool.
But did those, those pages, but really that page, although it's a page and a half, did that really add much to the story?
Not really. They spent time on it. It humanized them a little bit, but then that guy's gone forever. He didn't impact the story at all. Not one iota.
So I feel there are some aspects that were, I don't say indulgent, because I like the page, but it's not the best Astro City we've got.
Yeah. You know what's funny? This just struck me. I was like, someone of a, and I'm just saying this in general, yeah, this was not on anyone, but I was like, it would have been great if he had a lady editor, someone with familiar, maybe with a family or something, to give him some guidance on the editing side and just be like, hey, wouldn't it be nice to say he had these other family members, maybe they're raised, or who raised them? It just because maybe that's a miss that an editor who had more of a family focus would have nudged him a little bit. Hey, tell something over here. And I'm not saying he missed, but to maybe develop the story a little bit better.
Well, and I question what level of editing Astro City typically gets, being a passion project by a big name writer in comics.
Yeah.
It's Kurt Busick's Astro City. It flat out says that on the cover often. So you're not going to, oh, you're doing it wrong, buddy.
Exactly.
But I do think there's some feedback of, you know, without this information, it's a little puzzling that.
Yeah. And actually, okay, it says editor. I looked at it. Scott Peterson. Mm-hmm. So it's a guy. And assistant editor, Christy Quinn. Don't know any of them, but there was a lady involved. I was just thinking, I was like, I don't know if it's a female perspective or just someone more. So Scott Peterson and Christy Quinn, neither one of them gave a nudge. I don't know how much input they have. Maybe they're just looking for typos and making sure he's not contradicting anything he said before. I don't know what their level of editing was.
I do think in the hands of, I'm going to say, better editor, and that's not really what I mean.
Yeah.
Because I don't know Scott Peterson or Christy Quinn, or if they're good editors, bad editors, whatever. They did a fine
Me
job
neither.
With this.
Yeah.
But I think in the hands of an optimal editor, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You would have had somebody that could have drawn a little bit more out of Kurt Busiek and company here, that could have given a little constructive feedback. Not to say these guys didn't, but again, who raised these guys? And I think that matters, because that would inform how they became who they became.
Exactly, because they're so different. So different.
Yeah. So I wonder if, because like Karen Berger over at Vertigo back in the day was reportedly a really great editor.
Yeah.
That's part of why Vertigo was what it became.
Yeah, she was known to be the person, and she was good at what she did.
And there have been other editors of that caliber over the decades, and I think that would have benefited this book. I mean, on the one hand, I want to suggest that what could have been interesting, but I would not have wanted to see, and I'll explain why in a second, would have been if Mark Waid had put his editorial hat back on for this.
Oh, yeah, that would have been cool.
But the reason I don't want to see that is I would love to see Mark Waid do his own superhero universe. I don't want to say his Astro City, but superhero comics, how he thinks they ought to be done, and build a universe as rich as Astro City.
That would be really cool. That would be fun. And I think he would do a good job at it. And I think it would be more superhero focused than Astro City is. Astro City is definitely a different fare.
That's fine. I just want something that over the span of, say, 130 issues or installments, I should say, like we've gotten here with Astro City, that we wind up with as rich and as deep of a world. In other words, focus on the Dunham ones, do the universe building, tell some good stories, reference the iconicness and archetypes of DC and Marvel, like Kurt has done here.
Yeah, I would like to see it. I mean, we're basically reading Busiek's here. I've been enjoying Mark Millar's take on superheroes. He tied them all together, and that he did a heck of a job. And so, yeah, Mark Waid, let's do yours.
It's one thing to take a bunch of properties like Millar had done over the years and stitch it together into the big game and stuff like that. It's another thing to set out to build a
universe.
An unshared universe is almost what I want to call it.
Yeah. His really was unshared. He's just talented enough where he was able to pull it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different animal, for sure. But I'll tell you what, this is good stuff. This is enjoyable. It's an epic, monumental feat. And there's very few writers who can pull stuff like this off.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just, it wasn't great stuff.
Yeah.
And I think some of the seams in the overall bedrock of the Dark Age really were coming to light for me in this book. And I'm hoping things pull together a bit better in the fourth and it ends on a solid note. I do not remember what happens next. Because again, it's been 14, 15 years since I read that stuff.
Yeah, and I've never read the Dark Ages, so I'm hoping they pull together and hoping the fourth installment works for us.
Hope so. Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.